Sure.
All right. Check one, check two. This is it. Welcome to the Cannabis Coffee Hour. I'm your host, Rob Cantrell. We are here in Red Hook, Brooklyn. I'm with a coffee expert, the head roaster for GothamCoffeeRoasters.com. He's been too cool to let me come down to their head roasting facility. I'll get some more pictures of that a little bit later, and I'll splice it in there. But let's say hello to my good friend, head roaster of Gotham Roasters, Andrew Richter, everybody. Andrew
Richter.
How you doing?
Good to be here. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Cheers.
Cheers.
Ooh, to ya. Andrew, thank you for doing this. I know you're not a super media savvy podcast guy, but you're
not my forte, but I'll do my best.
Yeah, you're doing great so far. Andrew made some great coffee. Like I said, this is a warehouse at the end of Red Hook. We have the Statue of Liberty right there. They have a huge roasting facility, and these guys have been nice enough to send me bags of coffee, sponsor my podcast, be down with somebody doing something creative and a little bit different. Welcome to the Cannabis Coffee, Andrew. Cannabis Coffee Hour, Andrew.
Thanks.
So you brewed us some coffee here. We got it outside.
Yeah.
Now tell me about Gotham Coffee Roasters and tell me about this coffee specifically.
Sure. So Gotham Coffee Roasters is a small independent coffee roaster. We've been roasting here in Red Hook for past 10, 11 years or so. Sourcing all of our own green coffee, roasting and wholesaling mostly to the New York City area. This one right here, this is actually, this is the Gesha coffee that you and I were talking about the other day. You said how much you liked it. This is a special product that we're doing just for one particular client.
And who's that? Who's the special guy that gets the special beans?
That is, we're partnered with some airport lounges in JFK. So they got very, very fancy airport lounge. They want a very fancy coffee.
Oh, they heard about the new Chase Airport Lounge in LaGuardia. Oh, it's supposedly the bomb. Not that one, but yeah, whenever you stumble a lounge, it's always nice. And I don't get access all the time, but some cards get me in there, and sometimes they don't.
It's nice. It's really nice when you get out. I haven't gotten to go to this one, but I've gotten to go and walk through and make sure everything is working. And I'm hoping one day that they give me a pass.
Yeah, they give me a pass.
We'll see, because it's a lot nicer than the rest of the airport. So
yeah, you can get to hide out, and everything's. It seems like a whole other world there. But now Gotham. Now you guys are specialty roasting. You told me about this bean that we're drinking now.
Yeah.
And then before this, you told me right before the pandemic, they sent you down to Colombia. How was that? Have you ever been to Colombia before?
No. So that was my first time to, going to Colombia. The second time visiting, some of our producers respectively. This was with, an importer that we work pretty closely with called, the Coffee Quest. So they have, they're both the importer and the exporter. And so they have their own operation in Colombia. Where they do all their own milling, and so they have direct relationships with a lot of coffee producers in various regions. So it was kind of a wild experience. It's just totally, completely different from, both the U.S. and especially New York City. You're out in these very rural areas in the mountains. The temperature is perfect. Everything grows. You just drop seeds and it would grow. It's the most fertile place I think I've ever been in my entire life. It was insane.
Oh. God, it sounds wonderful, especially with being in New York and being in Brooklyn. It's so industrial. And when sometimes you go to these smaller countries or less developed countries, and it's just like going back to nature, and you see it like it's just so raw and
it's
good.
It's wild.
And then Colombia, are they out in these little towns? Are they still coffee snobs? Would you say Colombia is
it's not true everywhere that grows coffee, but I would say in particular, the Colombians that I have met, are very proud of the Colombian coffee heritage and the reputation that is garnered by the product of their country. So most of them that I met and even know here in the city are big coffee drinkers. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a part of the culture, and I do know some Colombians, and it's just really a part of the culture. and being proud and being strong. And I would say it'd be amazing. Now, we had a conversation about beans in America. Now, do you get beans? I guess where the hot spots to get beans right now are like Colombia, South America, Brazil, and then Ethiopia.
Yeah. So I mean, there's coffee's a tropical plant. So basically, okay. I mean, you can draw two lines on a map, the two meridian. I forget what they're called. But in the tropics, basically in a band around the world, are the places that coffee will grow. Now, historically, for the many reasons, there are a few places where production is high and the infrastructure exists to grow it, produce it, process it, and then have it leave the country. So Latin America is probably the one that most Americans are most familiar with, Brazil, Colombia, Guatemala. One, that's proximity, and two, there's just hundreds of years of coffee production there and export to the United States specifically. But coffee is native to Africa, actually.
Wow.
So it originally, the plant itself and the different variations of it evolved in the jungles of Ethiopia. So that's where it's native to. That is where there's the largest biodiversity of different cultivars, different types of coffee plants growing wild. And it's where you can get some of the most distinct and like unique coffees being exported.
Yeah, I do think, like, from a general guy, this is 265 episodes of this podcast, so I drink a lot of coffee.
And, at least 265 cups.
At least.
Yeah.
And so I've tasted a lot. And so, yeah, I would say my favorite places that I've generally, Colombia, the beans are always great. Not always, but usually that's like a high-end or better bean than usual, even if I get it in a brown bag or, you know, just raw dog. That's always good. And then Peru, I seem to like, and Brazil, but especially Ethiopian beans. There's something, like you said, there's kind of an exotic taste to it all.
Yeah, there's a lot of differentiated flavors coming out of Ethiopia. You know, even down to individual regions, we'll be growing plants that are not two towns over. They're not growing the same type of coffee. And you get a lot of, I think, flavors that, particularly if you're used to Latin American coffees, or even just American style coffee in general, you won't be used to tasting in coffees from Ethiopia. A lot of fruit, a lot of floral character, high acidity coffees, you know, big citrus, especially like light roasted Ethiopian coffees that you might find at like specialty coffee roaster, specialty coffee shop. Yeah, it's usually pretty different than your standard fare.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Like anything, whether it's music, whether it's jazz, whether it's art, whether it's food, the further you push, like things go deeper and deeper. And coffee is one of those things that is, the further I push,
it's a rabbit hole.
It's a rabbit hole. It'll keep on going and going.
Forever. And then, you know, the further you go, you know, you end up turning around 10 years later and then you're me and it's your whole life. So there's a lot.
It's a good life.
It's been good to me.
You're awake.
Thankfully. Yeah. I'm awake. I need it to be awake. I don't think that I've not had a cup of coffee in like 20 years.
Not had a cup of coffee.
Yeah, in a single day.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And the thing I like about cannabis and coffee, because I was born in 72, so I'm getting older there, my man. But those are the two things that I've seen older people be able to, like, go into their old age enjoying.
Yeah.
Like, all old folks home, they all have, like, coffee everywhere. And it's like, I've seen 80, 90-year-old people just drinking coffee.
Yeah, whole pots of coffee.
Whole pots of coffee. You could just keep it going. And that's something that I want to do. And it's like, that's why I did this podcast. I was like, okay, these are the two things that I've always loved and I think will help me go forward in life and stay engaged and creative. And now how did everything, I mean, I could talk to you forever, but let's switch to American coffee.
Yeah, sure.
Because I do find it fascinating. And tell me about the Red Hook industry. Like, there is like a coffee street here and then there's like a couple different roasters. Is there a coffee history here of Red Hook? Is this where it all started?
So there is, but it's not related to the coffee roasteries that exist in Red Hook right now.
Okay.
So this warehouse actually that we're sitting in front of was built before the Civil War And did some amount of time as a coffee warehouse in the 19th century. So they were shipping and storing green coffee in here before sending it off to wherever they were going to process it. And so many incarnations later, it's once again being used for coffee. So yeah, Red Hook was the major point of distribution, point of shipping for like the wider New York area before they built like the big, I don't know if you can see them, all the giant cranes, Port of New York, New Jersey. Before they built that, it all came through here.
This was like the big central port.
Yeah.
Was the first American big central port, so everything had to come through here. But coffee seems to be really at the beginning. And I'm old enough to remember diners giving, you know, pretty much free cups of coffee. You know, it was like 25 cents.
They don't do that anymore?
A little bit, yeah. But yeah, it's hard to find it as much where they got,
that's
you
true.
Know, they'll just keep on pouring the coffee.
Yeah.
They'll just keep pouring it. But what I noticed, I mean, this is general, but when Starbucks got into play, there was something between the 90s and 2010 where coffee just went boom. Like, it was became a much bigger business, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, coffee, I mean, it has been a huge business forever, but it became kind of this consumer and I think lifestyle product more than it ever had been before, because where previously it was like a commodity or something that you enjoyed in the home or like a restaurant, now it's also one, it's a place to go, so it's another place to go, it's their
for
third
the
place concept, which I you know, they executed and popularized that very well. You know, to this day, people are still looking for that. They still go to Starbucks for those things.
Yeah, I love reading and writing in a coffee shop.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
One of my favorite things starting out in San Francisco in stand-up was just smoking a joint and going to the coffee shop for an hour and going through my notebook.
Yeah. And you can sit there and not be hassled. You know, I mean, another part of it is I think it's also an indicator of status to an extent.
Yes.
Having the cup, being able to pay luxury prices for this luxury product. So whatever you think of Starbucks product, like their actual coffee, whether you like it or not, it is a luxury product, and there are these complicated formulations of beverages with like fancy, you know, and they see the TikToks with like the glitter pink drink and like, you know, so you're buying both an image and, you know, an actual something to consume.
Yes. Instead of goods, it is a service in terms of blending it, giving you the shot of espresso, giving you the half milk, half that, half this.
Absolutely.
Do you like just a good old cup of coffee, or do you are you going, I want espresso, I want this, I want that?
I would say 90% of the time I'm just drinking straight drip filter coffee like we have in this pot.
Yeah. I would say I'm the same. But it does, espresso does taste good after a while. There is a certain taste to espresso that I love.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love espresso. Personally, I think that it's sometimes a little too, it's not that it's strong. It's just so concentrated that I feel like you can't quite taste some of the nuance as much. Like, you know, there's so many overpowering strong flavors. When I tend to have it, I'll usually drink it as a short Americano. I'll water it down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I do like straight espresso. If you've ever been to Italy, it's absolutely worth it to experience that. They're a very distinct espresso coffee culture that they have there.
It's almost the cups. I like the cups. I like the porcelain.
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah.
I like, there's something about, and thank you for this beautiful porcelain cup. Yeah, I mean, there's something about coffee in a porcelain cup. For some reason,
it's better.
It's better.
I don't know why.
I don't know why.
I don't have the answer for that. It just feels better.
Same thing with, you know, bottles of Coca-Cola. Like, I think the container of things does matter. Mm-hmm. Same thing with companies. Like, vibes do matter as much as people say it doesn't. But yeah, if your container's tin and you don't give a fuck and it's not recyclable or it's plastic, and your coffee's going to be kind of, you know, even if it's the best coffee in the world, if you don't treat it with love, it's going to be kind of skanked out.
Yeah. And I mean, the porcelain doesn't get crumply and wet and cold after, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Not the paper cups. Yeah.
I don't know, I drank ice water out of a wine glass yesterday to feel fancy, so I think you're right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, nice. Ice water out of a wine. Oh, that's a good one. What kind of ice were you having? What kind of
what
ice?
What kind of ice?
Out of the tray? Did you have an ice machine? I'm a big fan of ice, too. I like crunched ice.
Oh, like the like the Sonic, like crunchy.
Yeah,
oil,
yeah,
like
totally.
Pebble,
oh, that if you ever get anything slushy, I love.
So it's funny. My partner's family got the crunchy ice machine. And so then they got rid of their old ice machine, and that's what I have. So I, yeah. So
you
I
got the, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I got the hand-me-down, but I didn't spend any money. So
you didn't get any money, but you got some BB ice or some big boy
it's,
ice.
It's just like regular
cubes.
I don't know, little cubes. Little
yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got these orange slice cubes that are coming out of my ice maker, but yeah, water, ice, glass, awesome, porcelain, coffee, amazing, espresso. Now you said you were a barista. Now, how high level does the barista world get? Like,
it gets very arcane.
I bet, man, because it's not a simple thing.
So it's not a simple thing, but there's like, I think there's also a difference between, the people who are, kind of in this highest echelon. Usually, that's competition. So there's these very like well-developed competition space community. Where people are competing on preparations and recipes, fancy drinks, latte art, etc. And that's kind of its own world that's, I think, separated a little bit from people who are just like a working barista. Like, this is my job. This is, what I'm doing for a living. But even within that, there's various different levels. It takes quite a lot of training to bring someone from zero experience to, being able to do, 2-3 drinks per minute on an espresso machine. And it is about that speed and about that consistency.
And about the measurements. A lot of them.
It's a lot of measuring.
Yeah, it's a lot of measuring. It's a lot of waiting out. Like, the high-end espresso people almost look like cocaine dealers. Like, they're like.
Oh, yeah, we get the little scales. Our scales are nicer than their scales. Honestly.
Yeah, I bet.
They're more responsive. They're faster. They got timers built into them. They build them into the espresso. So we're actually, I don't think they're in today, but we're next to the La Marzocco espresso machine showroom. They build all this stuff into the espresso machines now with scales and pressure profiles, and like that's its own rabbit hole, just the preparation of coffee itself.
It is, and how measured and how much pressure of water you come through it. It's just fascinating, man. But I do love I love the sound of the machine really rocking when I hear the guy clackety-clacking and smacking
the
thing down.
There's a rhythm to it, too.
There's a rhythm to it.
Whatever music that they're playing. Usually the barista is the one choosing the playlist.
Is the DJ on the...
Yeah, a little bit. So you're like half DJ, half customer service, half like weird coffee octopus, eight arms like flying around grabbing stuff. It's a fun job. But it wears down your wrists, actually, after a while.
I would think so. There's some carpal tunnel going on that you got to watch out for. And especially when you're jacking up caffeine, I have noticed. My friend that was a drummer, and he had to quit coffee because of, tendonitis. Yeah, tendonitis in his hands.
I didn't know that it exacerbated that.
Yeah, I just think the caffeine, will shock, your nervous system. And sometimes I will say, just your bones and you just got to watch it a little bit. Like, I drink a lot of, I know when to have some water.
Sure, yeah.
But I think if you're, rocking in a band for an hour and 45 minutes,
you might be a little more prone.
You might be a little bit more prone to the but, yeah, there is, a whole DJ cool, you're running the ship if you are the barista. What about the high-end baristas? Is there a six-figure barista out there?
Probably.
I
don't know many of them.
Yeah,
I don't know many of them though. So that's like
you would have to own the coffee shop.
I mean, you could own the coffee shop, but then you're probably not the barista usually.
Yes.
You're doing other stuff. I would say maybe not. Depends on how you arrange it.
Barista's a little bit of a bartender vibe too. Like, you should be social. A little bit.
Yeah. So it's definitely a social position. If you don't like talking to people, especially in the morning, it's probably not a job.
Yeah. Because I know people that bartend or don't bartend, and the ones that are good are a little bit more sociable. And I would say that's probably the same thing with being a barista. Like, you got people in your face.
People in your face. You got to treat them well. It's a tipped position. So, I mean, baristas can do pretty well, honestly. It is one of those things. It's emotional labor. It's social labor.
Now, from a novice, going back to the America thing, what would you say is the top, big NBC, CBS, ABC of coffee right now?
The top producer in the United States?
My guess would be Starbucks, Stumptown, Pete's.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Dunkin', yes!
Or Starbucks. Somewhere, you know, between
Starbucks
those two.
Starbucks and Dunkin' are definitely your top NBC, ABC.
Yeah, their volume is just enormous. It's just incomprehensible.
Yes.
They're bringing in so much coffee. If you want to dial...
What country are they bringing? Are they bringing it from everybody
all
when you're that big?
Yeah, all over the place.
By any means necessary.
Majority Brazil. So Brazil outproduces basically every other nation by several factors. They are just producing an enormous amount of... coffee every year, that more or less they have a very outsized influence on the commodity price, actually, so on the exchange.
Oh, they are like the Middle East of gasoline. Brazil's holding the coffee price
basically
down.
You know, and there have been similar histories of, you know, like coffee you know, cartels and like holding back supply and influencing like the price, and lots of sanctions from the U.S. and back and forth. There's a sordid history of all of it. Yeah,
we had a phone conversation. The reason I've had Andrew on, I asked him for a sponsorship. He's like, Rob, I'll give you some great bags of coffee. We like what you're doing. Keep it moving. So I said, but I got him on the phone, and yeah, we were talking about why Brazil's, it's just got a lot of real estate. Like, it's just a big, big,
big
country with big farms that can handle that many beans. In America, we're a big country. But we're not hot enough, I don't think. We don't have...
No, so it's not warm enough. The climate's
not warm enough.
There are a few small production farms. I think there's one in Arizona. I think there's another one in California where it's feasible, but not nearly at a scale.
What about North Carolina and Virginia, like on the Appalachian? Like, I would think... Like,
it's too cold in the winter.
It's too cold in the winter, yeah.
So you can't frost the plant at all, or it just dies, completely dies back.
Yeah, the coffee plant, I have a little coffee plant that I've been growing for four years. But it's literally like got five leaves on it.
Yeah.
Overwater it, it starts going wrong. Mm-hmm. If I underwater, like, it hasn't even produced a bit of fruit because, yeah, I do. It has to be tropical and then it has to be rocky. That's why Jamaica has great coffee. You and I also talked about it. Like, I love Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee. And where their beans, but I was always like, why not Puerto Rico? I'm a big fan of America, and I'm not into Trump or nationalism or anything like that. But I do think, like, okay, Starbucks is this big company. Why aren't they should be getting the beans from us. Like, we should be, like, making some beans. And I think Puerto Rico and Hawaii were the two ones that I looked up that were like, oh, these are the American climates that would work.
Yeah. So they're basically the only... two places where it's really feasible to do it on any commercial scale.
Yeah.
But still, it's, you know, it's an island. The real estate is fairly limited.
Yeah.
So there's only a certain amount of land, one, just devoted to agriculture at all, and then two, devoted to that coffee crop. So it's a small production, and it's generally a bit higher cost both to produce it because of the real estate, because of the labor, because of... surprisingly, import and export in Puerto Rico, there's rules about that, into and out of the U.S.
I could see that.
But, yeah, so you don't see too much of it.
Yeah. I'm just thinking maybe if I get myself a big bag of green Puerto Rican beans, I'll maybe bring them down here to roast.
We'll roast it together.
We'll do a limited batch of roasting. And you were showing me you have three machines back here. We were going to do it, but the sound, last minute, I was like,
it's very
this
loud.
Looks cool.
There's a lot of motors. There's a lot of compressors. There's a lot of production going on.
Yeah. Those are Mercedes-Benz engines back there just cranking away. But it's also smells great, and it's just a great environment. I felt awake. I felt more alert. Tell me about Gotham's history, Gotham Coffee Roasters. Now, because I kind of got fascinated. You have one shop. That's in the flat. It's in Manhattan.
Yeah, 19th Street.
19th Street. That's super nice. I know some foodies that are all about it. I was like, oh, yeah, my friend Shawnee Slice. Shout out to Shawnee Slice. Follows them. He's like a pizza connoisseur, foodie guy. So you have that shop. And then this is more of like a warehouse. And then you do consulting as well. Like you consulted on the... at the airport where they had the lounge, like you'll go in and do certain setups.
Yeah, so we have the one retail location, which is a functioning business, but also, you know, kind of a showcase for our product, you know, in Manhattan, in the city. People come familiar with the brand, but we're primarily a wholesale company. Yeah. So we're doing wholesale production here, and we'll walk through it with anybody that wants to open a coffee shop or add a coffee service to, you know, an office, an airport lounge, etc. So we have a lot of connections with equipment dealers and all of the various facets of implementing coffee in like a space. And so we'll go on site, take a look at things, like tell people, hey, you should look at this, you should look at that, what the budget is.
Consultant.
Yeah.
You guys are that's what's so badass about you guys. Like, I got turned on through Shapeshifter Lab. Shout out Fortuna and Matt Garrison, got me into your coffee and then sent me an email, and I hit you guys up. And then I did a little bit of more research. And the founder, his name is Chris, right?
Yeah, Chris Culkins.
Chris Culkins, and he is kind of famous in the coffee world. He started with the guy that started with Pete's, or like...
So he started... you know, he's going to get me if I get the timeline wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, back in like the late 70s, early 80s. So back at like the founding of, like, you're talking about like Starbucks and Pete's and like
they
all
call
these
it the third
these,
wave or what are they?
That would be the size. So if you go by that nomenclature, there are three waves, maybe four, of coffee. That would be the second, which is kind of popularizing European style, like espresso preparation and like craft roasteries.
Yeah.
So that would be like
instant, like America was all about instant and Maxwell House and all that.
Folgers,
which was good, but you know.
So like a step away from commodity. What was I saying? So yeah, back then he started a coffee business and then ended up training under Alfred Pete, who was the founder of Pete's Coffee. He ended up selling that bit. Pete ended up selling that business later on. But he trained under Alfred Pete how to roast and started a coffee chain on the West Coast called Spinelli Coffee, which I had like 13 locations at one point. You know, he also...
I think they were on Polk Street. Like, I lived in San Francisco. And
oh, no way. Yeah, you might have...
Spinelli, I think it's right on Polk Street, because I worked at, if he listens, I worked at Lombardi's, which is, Lombardi's was an outdoor store, but it went under, but it was this huge family outdoor store, but the hookup was I got free lift tickets at Tahoe
if
I worked there.
Yeah.
But I think I remember there's one on Spinelli, like, I know that name, it rings a bell.
Yeah, he ended up selling that business sometime in the 90s, I don't remember exactly when. And then had a stint as a winemaker in Sonoma, and came back to New York and opened, actually before Gotham, there was Prodigy Coffee, which he opened with a partner. That was in like 2010, 2012, something like that. When Pully opened up in 2013, he thought, you know, I know how to roast. I have this background in coffee. We're opening this coffee shop. Why don't we, you know, produce our own product? And so this was about the time that specialty coffee and kind of these, you know, like you would call it third wave or whatever you want to call it, revival of interest in specialty coffee was happening in New York and, you know, kind of around the country. And he's like, oh, well, I should jump back into this, and started Gotham Coffee Roasters, which was just a roastery at the time. So there was no retail location. And that was in 2013, 2014.
That's awesome. That's such a wild journey.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to the roots. He's been doing it for 40 plus years.
Oh, is he a deadhead?
I actually don't. He would be. He is. He's
from the Bay Area. I would think he's of that time. And if he were roasting beans up in Marin in the 80s and 90s, he may have seen a couple dead shows.
I think for sure. He was hanging out in like the West Village and, you know, like the 60s.
Oh, wow.
Very
funky.
And then over to the West Coast and steeped in all of that.
Love it.
I don't know specifically the dead. I don't think he followed.
But counterculture and coffee, I guess, has always kind of been hand in hand. And I think, I don't know, there's something about like graduating from college and you're starting to make your way in the world and becoming an adult. Like, I don't know, there's something with coffee and creativity that kind of goes hand in hand.
I agree. I don't know necessarily what it is. I mean, I think it's a social beverage that's not alcohol.
Yes.
So instead of, getting drunk and telling your buddy how much that you love him. You know, you can wake up in the morning and have a conversation and talk about, like, what book did you read last? So there's just a certain amount of that, that, you know, if those ideas are going around in society, this would be the beverage that you share them over, I think.
Yeah, this is where you talk it. Coffee is where you talk it out, get down to the brass tacks. But it's also that, I don't know, man. As soon as I had a kid, like, I drank more. I'm just, thank God for the stuff.
I just love it.
I think I'm not going to love it. And then I wake up and I'm like, I love it. I still get off on the good taste, and I'm still getting more and more snobby with how I like it. But then again, I also like bad coffee. It's a lot like pizza that way.
I agree. And I don't know if that opinion is shared by all of my peers and colleagues, but I love diner coffee. Grew up going 24-hour diners. It's 3 in the morning, and they just, like, keep them coming, and I'll drink any cup of coffee.
What's your Dunkin' order?
It's a medium ice with one cream.
Yes. Yeah. Medium ice. Sometimes I get a medium ice with a shot of espresso.
I actually have not had their espresso. I'm too wary of it.
It's pretty good.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know. Dunkin', the taste and the essence of the coffee seems to be intact. Whereas Starbucks, I don't know what's going on.
They roast very dark.
Yeah, they roast very dark, and I'm just not a fan of a dark roast. I like a bourbon. I like a medium roast is my favorite. But my friend just gave me, everybody's been giving me bags of coffee. He gave me some Japanese coffee with vanilla bean ground into it. So it was like whole bean in vanilla bean.
Expensive.
But it's like very, he's like a caterer. And he knew about me, and he gave me like this bag. He's like, hey, man, I know you're into coffee. But it was a Japanese, it's like what you make boba tea or coffee out of. It has this sweetness to it without the sugar. And it has, like, vanilla bean ground into the grounds, and it's already ground. It's in this blue bag. But it is very dark. That's the only reason I break it into it.
Sure.
But somehow the vanilla bean evens it out, so it doesn't give me that gut rot. That gut rot, that dark coffee
that
does.
Yeah, like, kind of dark, bitter.
It gets right at the bottom layer of your stomach, and you're like, oh, man. Now, switching to music. A little pop culture. We've been almost 30 minutes now. I don't want to waste you. I don't want to burn you out. Are you guys sponsoring? Is Gotham sponsoring? I saw that you from your Instagram account that you were sponsoring a tattoo artist. Working with a tattoo artist?
Well, that's actually a personal connection of Chris's. He is friends with a few tattoo artists in and around New York City. He has, I think, one large tattoo. He got a large tattoo in the past couple years, ended up hanging around with these guys. His name's Chris Garver. We actually commissioned him to make some artwork for us that's going to go has gone on a t-shirt that we're selling on our website. So, you know, it's like a cup of coffee with motif is Year of the Dragon. So it's like American traditional, you know, Japanese.
I saw that
dragon.
And I was into it. It's
kind of, it's not our usual, you know, like very black and white, like
muted colors.
But it's a lot of fun. He's a great artist.
I just like when companies or businesses are supporting art, especially really good. I'm not a tattoo guy. I don't have any tattoos. I'm not an anti-tattoo, hang out with all kinds of people. But I do know some of the best graphic designers are tattoo artists. Like, they're sick artists. Like, the
I'm
top end
yeah.
is like, yeah, I would love to get a flyer by that dude. So what about any music? Are you guys sponsoring any band, any connection to any music?
Not really. Sponsoring or commissioning? No, the overlap is not. There's not a ton of overlap with music and like events. So, I mean, like even concerts, like most people are not drinking coffee like late in the evening. So there's just not a ton of lot of our employees are musicians.
And artists and writers, I would think.
Yeah, it tends to attract that kind of crowd.
Yeah, a lot of English majors in coffee.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I am. I like having a little bit of not as deep conversation on it. It was like, what is the last song? What are you listening to right now, Andrew?
Oh my God.
What is the last song? And it could be corny. It could be a TV music or theme.
Literally the last song or?
Yeah, literally the last song when you were riding here. What was on your Spotify? What's playing on your Spotify right now that you're rocking?
It was a track by a group called Ligas Menores.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'd have to look up.
Latin American progressive rock. That was my guesstimation.
That you're very spot on. Yeah, Accidente. Las Ligas Menores.
Shout out to these cats.
Yeah, so. And very, very, I don't know.
I love the
90s
artwork.
Sonic youth-y kind of. It's in Spanish, so if you want to understand what they're singing about, speak Spanish.
Yeah.
But
I don't even, sometimes I like hearing French rap. And I don't even speak in French.
Oh, I don't speak Spanish, so it's just great. It's just happening around.
It sounds,
I'll pick up a word or two,
beautiful.
And like, yeah. So it's just good music.
It's a vibe, yeah. And I do know that is like all these little countries that all have like old punk rock scenes. So you'll find like an Ecuadorian punk rock vinyl, and
they're from
like,
Peru.
Yeah, these dudes are from Peru.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a Peruvian roommate, and he was cool as hell. People from Peru are very cool.
It's one of our clients in New Jersey actually runs a Peruvian like bakery and restaurant featuring like coffee, Peruvian cuisine, Peruvian bakery. Really fantastic.
I need to go to Latin America a little bit more. I've done a lot of Mexico, but I haven't gone deeper. I've done Mexico City.
Nice.
I've done Cancun, and then what's the Oaxaca?
Oaxaca?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was the place that kind of, that was like my deep trek, was Oaxaca. That blew me. It was like it's an artist colony. It's like an artist town, and
yeah.
All that wild art comes from there. And that's what blew my mind.
I would really love to visit there. I've been to Mexico City several times.
It's popping right now. All the young cats are going
it's
there.
It's a really cool place. I love it there. We went for Day of the Dead in 2019 actually, and like saw like the parade and like all these. It was awesome. It was incredible.
The whole concept of Day of the Dead I always loved is just remembering all your dead friends.
remember all those guys.
Yeah, remember those dudes.
I think it's better than Halloween. I think it's more fun than Halloween.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit deeper and better, and it's just in terms of life and death, I think it's a healthier way to see the whole compass all the way around. So
I agree.
I'm a fan of that holiday. There should be is there a National Coffee Day?
Yeah, there's a National Everything Day.
Yeah,
I don't remember what it is. No one's really ever done anything that special for it. I think maybe you can get a free Dunkin'.
Yeah, you can get free Dunkin'. Sometimes it's like National Coffee Day. You get a free iced coffee. You get a free this. But yeah, every day there's something. It's National Duck Day.
Sometimes we'll do like a promotion. I think it's in October. I forget what the date is. But I think there's also like a National Muffin Day. So.
Oh yeah, and it goes hand in hand. What would you say? I won't drag you out too long. But what would you say is your favorite food item with coffee?
Food item to pair with coffee.
Yeah.
I am not gonna break the mold here. I am gonna say something traditional, like baked goods. I would say probably either a croissant or some kind of just simple cookie. Something small, just a little bit of starch in the morning. Not too crazy flavors. I still want to taste the coffee.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good A baked item is always good. A light cinnamon. There's something about a cinnamon. I don't know. Cinnamon and coffee really go well.
Cinnamon pairs well.
Morning eggs go well. An egg sandwich and coffee. I was just thinking about an amazing egg sandwich with coffee. I was going to ask a little bit earlier, have you ever had tiramisu?
Tiramisu? Yeah, yeah.
It
has coffee in it,
That's like a coffee dessert. Like Gotham, you guys should, I'm telling you, get some Puerto Rican beads and get some tiramisu popping.
The preparation's a little difficult because you got like wet things and dry things.
Mix
them in like a whipped cream. So it's, we tend to stick, we don't do any food prep.
Yeah, food prep,
and
you got rats.
And the reason for that is because it's complicated.
Yeah.
And things go bad. I think a few of our clients, like Italian restaurants, actually use the coffee for tiramisu and other pastries.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. And I also read about you can use coffee grounds. You can grow things in it, can't you?
Yeah.
Like, people use it as soil for, like, flower beds.
Yeah, so you can mix it into your soil. It composts very, very well. The only thing to watch out for is that it's got an elevated pH. So if you overdo it, you can make your soil pretty acidic.
Acidic.
So depending on what you're trying to grow, that might be good, that might be bad.
Tomatoes probably might work.
Yeah, you could do it with tomatoes. I mean, in general, it's just a good addition. There's also, we have been, I don't know how consistently, but there's over there is a Red Hook Community Farm where we've been donating the chaff from coffee roasting. So this is like a cellulose, like papery skin that like comes off of the roasted coffee, gets collected in like a giant bit. We got to scoop it out every day.
Yes.
So we've just got pounds and pounds and pounds of this stuff. And especially in like the spring and summer when they're composting and mulching, they'll come and pick up like bags and spread it all over. It's great fertilizer.
Yeah, it's a biodegradable. Coffee is biodegradable. And this was early on when I did French presses in the city. I stopped doing this because I don't think it was good, but I would take the old coffee that I did the French presses and just do it down the drain. And somebody said that it just washes through. Like it doesn't stop up the drain because it's biodegradable.
I mean,
it matters,
I don't
about
know.
Your pipes. That's what I said.
Yeah,
I live in
probably
an old building and I was like, I don't know about this dude telling me this.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust that. Like in an old like New York City building, like it's going to get stuck somewhere.
Yeah.
In like, you know, new construction with those big wide PVC pipes. Yeah, it's probably fine. I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
I'm not a plumber.
But I like how you're saying you're being real with it. And it's like, yeah, you should.
Throw it out.
Don't wash it.
Compost it.
That was some stoner friend of mine telling me that. I did it for like a year, and then I was like, this might go
wrong.
Did
it work?
Yeah, it did, and we moved. But, you know, if you were
so
there.
You don't know. You don't know.
I don't know. I don't know how much we moved. But, you know, but my girl was like, you got to stop doing that shit. And I did. But I do like that it just all washes away. Now, I'm getting to the point where I got to go to the bathroom. So I think we're gonna wrap it up right now, Andrew.
That's all right. Yeah, no worries.
I appreciate your time.
Of course.
You want to give a plug to anything or give a shout out on the podcast?
Well, you're putting me on the spot now. you know, I'm going to shout out to all our staff at the shop, Jagger, Zimri, Amanda, some of my favorite folks that we work with. So.
Shout out, Amanda. Shout out, everybody. Chris, everybody at Gotham Roasters. I appreciate you here from the Cannabis Coffee Hour. Peace and one love. We're going to wrap it up with that.
Peace out.
Peace. Oh!